in terms of if one is meeting with an intellectual group and one happens to be the only Indian, it's my, isn't that lovely? It's so nice to have an Indian around. Then in terms of another context, it would be, well, my dear, and what can we do for you? And I don't care what context it is, it's patronizing. Because the Indians are still in that inferior category of being helpless little children, even in terms of majority society, and yet on the other hand, they're still seen as these savages. Children grow up thinking of Indians as savages. And they make fun of the other children who are Indians in the class and saying that, well, we don't want to get next to you because you might scalp us.
Do you foresee any change of the stereotype through movies or TV?
Not at this point. They still haven't. I have yet to see a movie which deals with the Indians in a realistic situation. We're dealing with them now with historically, but we still have to have war bonnets and headdresses, costumes. I have yet to see a contemporary movie done in which Indians wear what they normally wear, whether it be jeans or any other kind of business suit or anything. I have yet to see a movie put out today which deals with an Indian in that context. We're still dealing with Indians back in earlier times when everybody ran around in a costume. And I rightly doubt whether that was also true. And we just really haven't come to deal with Indians in 1970. That's all. That's really what I'm basically saying.
Do you think the white society can make a movie where they depict the Indians as being human and show the true situation of a lot of whites starting the wars and things like that?
No, I think the Indians could do it. I think I would like to see. I think what Jay Silverheel said in a paper article a couple of weeks ago, that he said a white man can never feel like an Indian. And as long as you have white writers writing scripts for Indians, it's going to come out that way. And unless you have Indian writers and Indian directors who understand and who feel Indian, you're never going to come out with an Indian viewpoint. It's always going to be words put into the mouth of an Indian that doesn't come out that way. And I really agreed with that when I read it, because there is something to feeling Indian and feeling a part of one's cultural heritage, which try as a white man can, he never will feel it. Fine feeling. And I think that until we get Indians into the media, it will come out. I did see a nice short put out by Duke Redbird, who was an Indian in Canada. And this was really great. It was a cartoon, and it was about Sammy Squash. And Sammy Squash gets an education, and he goes to town to work, and people, when he was little, told him, well, you can't be an Indian and get an education. So he gave up all his Indianness to get his education, and he went to work in an office because he got a BA degree, and he was educated, so he went to work in an office. So then they all said, well, you can't be an Indian. Look, you have a suit on. You've got to wear feathers. You can't be an Indian. All Indians wear feathers. So then poor Charlie Squash goes back to his reserve, and he sits around by the river again thinking of what he can do, because he can't be an Indian as a child, and then he still can't be an Indian in the white man's world, because he doesn't look like an Indian. He doesn't dress like an Indian. So therefore, he decides what he, in the picture, and the little cartoon ends up, and it was really great. Charlie Squash goes back to town, he buys a gift shop, he hires a white man to run it, and he goes back to the reservation, and he gets the income from his gift shop while he pays the white man so he can fish on the reservation. And I think those kinds of things, Duke Redbird understood it with what it was all about when he produced that. He could understand attitudes on both sides, because he had been subjected both cultures. And I think that gets to be more realistic as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think most Indians give up their Indianness in order to get an education?
No, I don't really think so. I really think it's a whole question of just not really portraying their Indianness in a different cultural context. I don't think most Indians give up being an Indian. I suppose I can only speak of my own self and other people that I know well who've gotten educations. We probably learn to shut up when we should shut up. And then you get sick on the inside because you know you've done it. There are certain times in a classroom when statements are made, and all you can do is sort of make a statement to contradict it, but not really come out with the anger that you feel. But I think that in order to get through that system, you sort of play down one aspect. But I don't think one gives up one's Indianness. I really don't. I think it's there. And that's why I see it really, I like it now with the young kids in school, with the fact that there's that strong identity about identifying as a group on the campus, rather than just a lone individual going to school.
There are now other minorities getting interested and helping the Indians and Indian movement. Do you think this is what it will take, same as the Black movement, Chicano movement, other minorities?
I think it will help if they too understand that they are only in a helping category. If it's Indian leadership, Indian control, Indian directed, and Indian causes. But I think the Black movement could see when they had other outside influences that it can be taken over as a cause by a group. If it's really done sincerely, then that's one thing. And I would hope that other minorities wouldn't do that to Indians, but I think we can see in terms of many white movements that if there's a cause it's espoused, they'll be there to get some sort of leverage from it. So I like to see cooperation among minority groups in terms of causes if we don't lose sight of what that cause is and who that cause is for.
Some young Indians say now that tribal government is corrupt, that they have no need for tribal government now. Is this correct in your opinion?
I think that I would strongly agree that many tribal governments are corrupt. That's because of European affairs. It's made them corrupt. They've had to kowtow to the Bureau in order to get what they want for their people, and in the meantime then have taken on so many of the qualities that we don't see as desirable. You know, feeding your own people. I mean, what good Indian in a sense would really, you know, screw his own people to get himself ahead in the world. But I don't know, I think tribal governments, in a sense, there has to be some kind of governing body. Who's going to govern the reservation? There does have to be some decision kind of making process. There has to be somebody in control to cooperate with, you know, county government, the city government. Who are they going to deal with? And I think maybe what a number of people are saying is not that there shouldn't be any tribal government, but can we not go back to a form of government which was more traditional to us? And I can only see in terms of my own people, where we have such a big split. Those who are very opposed to the tribal government and those who are for it. Those opposed are people who believe in the traditional way, which says, because we still have our clan membership. We still know who belongs to what clans. And so we can then say, well, why can't our clan leaders lead like they used to do before the government decided they couldn't be? And for instance, around here, when you've got patrilineal bands, the old men in the patrilineage were the traditional leaders. Old men were wise, they made the decisions. And maybe they don't understand, we think they don't understand what goes on in the outside world, but they sure do. They know what's really going on. Maybe I think that's maybe what a lot of the young people are feeling too, that there has to be some kind of compromise, because what we've got now in most reservations is not working. it really isn't solving the problems. So maybe another kind of one. But I do think there has to be some kind of governing body. We've always had governing bodies, whether it's just even tribal elders, unofficially. People would go to them for information.
Do you think it's true that most of the young Indians, although they want more Indian rights, are getting away from traditional Indian roles? Like, I was going to say that most young Indians don't even know their nation's language and things like that, and have no desire to learn.
Yeah, I don't know whether they have no desire to learn. I think many of them do, and many of them are learning. But I suppose, you know, to be realistic, one sort of has to look to 1973 and see how does an Indian function in 1973. And I don't think we've ever really come to a decision as how that is best done yet. I know many Indians who are fluent in their language, who are fluent in their songs, dances, cultural ways, and function very well in outside society. We function in both extremely well, and I feel that one can do that. I don't think you have to deny one to take the other. I'm just thinking a number of people from my own place who, you know, can go from speaking Indian and speaking English, you know, or after the other. Talk to one person English, talk to one person Indian. And they manage very well. And so I can't really see why that we can't have, you know, the combination. And I do think that many of the young people are seeing this. And I do think, and these are young people I'm talking about. I'm talking about people in their 20s who are able to do this.
Do you think that the Indian needs to know his language in order to keep up with his cultural background?
Yeah, I really do. I think language is important, and I think that just like talking with Ray, he spoke it as a child. When he went to school, he couldn't. Now he's really picking it up, and he's learned a lot. And I bet you in another year he's going to be talking to school.
Do you think that white society tried to steer the Indian away from his language?
They not only tried to, there was policy. Kids were whipped for it. Kids were beaten for speaking their own language. Their hair was cut. You know, Indians came to school with long hair. Their hair was cut. They were not allowed to go home for ceremonials because it was government policy to assimilate and acculturate the Indian and to civilize him. And the only way you could do that was not let him speak his own language, not let him attend his religious ceremonials, and not dress like an Indian. And it was really strictly government policy.
Do you think it's still government policy to try to assimilate the Indian
yes.
into our society?
Yes, I do.
And you think it's an impossible task?
Yes, I think that they've seen that it was impossible from the time the Bureau of Indian Affairs was formed, and I think they would see it's impossible now.
Do you think this is just one more way to keep the Indian down?
Yeah. I mean, I think to not let Indians go ahead as members of an Indian cultural group is one way of keeping them in their place.
Does it come down to wounded knee? what do you think is the significance of wounded knee?
Well, I think that it has pointed out to many, many people in this country who maybe were a little bit aware or completely unaware of really what the plight of the Indian situation is today. Whether it will make any effect on them or not, whether it's just going to be another cause for 1973 and then forgotten. But I do think the fact that they have held out there, they have been armed, but I really think that, you know, 300-400 young Indians really mean business. And although they've had a lot of criticism from many Indian groups, they've also had a lot of support from many Indian groups. And I believe that it has focused a lot of attention And as I pointed out to one of the students the other day, you know, I've been reading the newspaper now for many long years, and it's the first time I've seen a double-page spread in the editorial section of the LA Times devoted to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Indian Problems, Statement by Indians. Last Sunday, there was a nice long article by Vine DeLaurie on the front page of the LA Times editorial section about the situation at Wounded Knee. And it has focused not only there then, but nationally. Because what's wrong at Pine Ridge is wrong on many other reservations. The poverty is there. The unemployment situation is deplorable. Health conditions are deplorable. And I think that maybe even if it doesn't make a lot of members of the population, you know, lay people, that concern, maybe it'll help have some effect on governmental policies. I don't know. But I think it's been a good thing. I really support them.
Why Wounded Knee? Why not someplace else?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, the last big battle, the last strong resistance of Indian people was the Sioux Nation at 1890, the Battle of Wounded Knee. And I think that cavalry at that point, when they killed so many women and children, and their last genocidal stand against the Indians, from then on they were practicing cultural genocide. That, up to that point, it was out and out genocide. And I think that symbolically the significance of saying we're going to make a stand, you know, you thought you finished this off in 1890, now you're going to have to deal with this again in 1973. And that's really great.
Do you think that the Indians at Wounded Knee had hurt themselves by carrying guns?
No, I don't really think so. I have thought about it, and you know, most people will say, well, I like what they're doing, but I don't like the way they're doing it. And you know, doggone, if those guys weren't dug in trenches with those guns, they'd have been cleaned out of there overnight. They'd have been shackled and put in jail, and that would have been the end. And I think the fact that they stood there, they've shot back, it's prevented the government from calling in the National Guard. It's prevented them from doing many things because they didn't want to shoot down another bunch of Indians in Wounded Knee. And I think if they didn't have those arms, it would have been over within 24 hours.
You think that the government now would face too much hostility from the people if they went and really tried to clear them out?
Yes,
shooting?
I do. I think there have been many statements by fairly influential Indians saying that, you know, we're behind them, even if, you know, some of them felt that the violence was unnecessary. I think that if you see what would happen if there wasn't any violence, it, you know, wouldn't have gotten any place at all. And I think that now that if they did clean it up, there would be a lot more erupting elsewhere. I think there would be more Little Wounded Knees. I really do.
Do you think that the Indians at Wounded Knee has hurt themselves with white supporters by the very fact of Wounded Knee?
No, because if they were really white supporters, they'd have still been there. And if you only support it on your own terms and you don't support it, I mean, either you have to say, yeah, the Indians have really been treated miserably, and I can accept what they're doing, and I understand it, and I'll support them anyway. Otherwise, then maybe we don't even need that support. I don't know. I just really feel strongly that, you know, what right does the white group have to say, well, I'll support you on my terms, is what they've been doing for hundreds of years. Doggone it, now they better start supporting on Indian terms.
Do you think the white support has really helped the Indian movement anyway?
Financially, I suppose we can say that there's been some support, you know, in dollars, in terms of dollars. But I don't, you know, people will espouse a cause for 6 months, 4 months, and then they'll let it go. Whereas, you know, Indian people have been supporting this cause for several hundred years. And they've done it at times with white support and done it at times without white support. But Indian people have still been supporting their own cause. And so I suppose, you know, sure, now we're going to need lots of dollars for Wounded Knee Defense Fund in terms of bail money. And we need that. But I do know that a lot of money has been raised among Indian people who don't have very much. You know, contributed their quarters and dimes and 50-cent pieces towards it, too. So, and, you know, sure, it's necessary, but I really would like to see them supported because they believe in the cause, not because that either they're going to support it this week and not next week, or they'll support it on their terms.
In your opinion, do you think that... I think you think that the Indians are in a favorable position at Wounded Knee, since it would cause too much havoc and really bad publicity for the government to rush the Indians or take them by force. Do you think right now this will cause the government to get on the stick and start seeing the Indian needs?
The government knows what the Indian needs are. I mean, you know, they've been there, and how many studies have been done, how many task force. You read a task force report in 1928, you read one in 1934, you read one in 1955, you read one in 1967. They're all the same. The government knows it. I think maybe at this point, the government may have to do something about it. But I do think there has to be pressure kept up. I don't think at this point we can have a Wounded Knee and then let it drop. I think that the pressure has to be maintained. I think it has to be voiced strongly against the government in order for the government to...
I've heard from some young Indians that the Indian as a race are dead or dying out, and that in two or three, four generations, that the Indian will be distinct. What do you think?
No, I don't think so. Indians have been here since Columbus landed in 1492, and it's 1973, and there's more, just about practically as many Indians as there were then, and I don't think that in two generations Indians are going to be disappearing. I really see, like among, you know, young Indians who are interviewed, I think maybe you would find people my age saying that more than you would the young Indians, because many of the young Indians I know feel very strongly that they shouldn't marry anybody but Indians, that they should maintain the strong Indianness, pass it down, and preserve what we have left.
To end the interview, what do you want as an Indian? What do you want in today's society?
Oh, gosh, I probably have about what anybody would want in this society as an individual. But as for a group of Indian people, I think that our health needs need to be met. I think that we have to, I've been really concerned about the high adolescent suicide rate, which in many areas is 10 times the national average. I think that we have to start attacking these problems so that young Indian people can see themselves as proud Indian people, that it is a strong culture to be proud of. And I would like to see those kinds of things, which can only come with economic development, and not done with the fact that the Indian has to be put down in order to succeed. I really like the strong cultural awareness now that many people, you know, have. They've always had it, but I think it's becoming really much more out in the open. And I really would like to just see the fact that, you know, our older people live longer, our infant mortality rate goes down, and that Indian people really can survive as proud Indian people. And they don't have to take second best. They were here first. We've always had, in a sense, our land base, whether it's been pushed back to the deserts and to the hills and everything else. But I really strongly feel that we have to maintain our feelings as Indian people. I think Vine Deloria puts it very well when he says, the strength of Indian culture is in interpersonal relations. How you feel about your fellow human being, how you feel about everything around you. That can't be lost as far as I'm concerned, because I think that we can gain some things in terms of economic advances, but I don't think we should ever lose that. And I think that's one of the nice things that I know when I'm in an all-Indian group. I really feel a part of it. I really feel that I'm around people who care about me, and I care about them, and that feeling I don't think should ever be lost. And I think that's really one of our strengths as Indian people, that we have that. And I think that's I don't really, I would hate to think that we would become so individualistically oriented that we would forget about the rest of our people. And so I would like to see other, you know, the economic aspects, the health and everything else, education, improve so that our people have more than they have, but as Indian people, not as individuals.
Okay, thank you very much for the interview.